Welcome to the Lessons from the Great Coaches podcast.
I've learned that you don't do it alone.
You learn so many different things from so many different coaches.
That's an elite learning environment.
Failure is not a problem. How you deal with it is a problem.
How to be resilient.
How important it is to infuse joy in the process of learning.
To be a good coach, you've got to give more than you take.
What an interesting life it is to be a leader.
My name is Paul Barnett, and you are listening to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we explore leadership through the lens of high-performance sport by interviewing great coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us lead our teams better. We started this podcast because we wanted to have better conversations with our families around the dinner table. In a social media world where the goal is often to be the star of the show, we wanted to change the conversation and talk more about selflessness, leadership, and responsibility. And the people we knew who best exhibited these qualities were great sports coaches. As the podcast has grown, the great coaches we have interviewed have shared so much insight and wisdom that we decided to create episodes dedicated entirely to the lessons that have resonated with us the most. Today's episode is on the topic of behaviours, and it features audio quotes from a large selection of the coaches that we have interviewed on the podcast. And just before we go to the episode, if you're a first-time listener, you can check out our library of interviews at our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com. And now, on to the topic of behaviours.
The Lessons from the Great Coaches Podcast.
From 2007 until 2011, I had the great fortune to travel regularly to India for work. It's a wonderful country, full of contradictions, beauty, and an unyielding obsession with cricket. As you walk through the arrivals hall at Mumbai Airport, there is a poster of Gandhi featuring his quote, "Be the change you want to see in the world." These words have always resonated deeply with me, as they capture the very essence of the idea that our actions speak louder than our words. And in many ways, it's gone on to shape my approach to parenting and leadership. Many of the great coaches we have interviewed also talk about actions, or as they refer to them as, behaviours. They describe behaviours as things you can see, actions within the team, and they talk about them as being an indication of the standards that the group expects of one another. And they are also one of the main things that they talk to their athletes about. Here is the cycling coach, Simon Jones.
I think a lot of the conversations you have as a coach around people's thoughts and feelings and behaviours, which then drive their actions. And then I think as a coach, quite often you kind of a very poor amateur psychologist. So I think the role of the psych within a team like ours is twofold. It's to support the athletes directly, but also support the coaches and upskill and educate the coaches, because they're the ones that are having the majority of the conversations with the athletes. And the third thing is we've had a process for a few years now about what's our performance behaviours and trying to understand what are those observable actions that we can take, which are aligned to our objectives of winning.
What is also interesting is that behaviours are often a topic that is discussed more frequently and deeply than team culture. Cameron Schwab, who has worked in both the sporting and corporate world, explains how high-performance behaviours are discussed in relation to the individual.
In conversations I have with people, say, "Oh, you come from elite sport, let's have a conversation about a high-performance culture." And I often say, well, we don't actually talk much about that. We talk about high performance behaviours, and it's high performance behaviours as it relates to the individual. So how do we get that person performing at a high performance level? And that is a different thing for each individual.
As a head coach, there is often the need to observe the athlete's behaviour and then challenge them when there is a gap versus what is expected. Tracy Menzies coached the world record holding swimmer Ian Thorpe, and here she explains this idea of challenge.
The behaviour you walk past is the behaviour you accept. And I've always been that, and I've always walked that walk, that I'm not frightened to call people out if they're behaving poorly or not doing something right. And the same in return. You've got to allow kids to, and I know I get criticised for it, but you've got to allow kids to fail. That's a process of learning, and put it in a way that you enable them to know how to develop from that, I think is really important. So that's one thing in teaching we always do. You're setting an environment up that's safe for learning, and part of that is you've got to fail sometimes to know how to move forward.
The importance of observing both small and big behaviours as the head coach was also something that English Premier League coach Thomas Frank talked about.
So a good example, for example, is that after we come home from our away match, it's very, very important for me that I take it back going off the coach because, yeah, I know that I'm the head coach, but I think we're all in it together. The kit man, of course, normally because he's a big part of that, physios and all that. And because we do it that way, leading by example, the players, that means my captain, the top scorer, all of them, they are taking it back. I always notice, of course, I'm not standing there overwatching them, but I'm noticing if anyone are shooting off early, only taking one thing. It's just in the back of my mind to make sure if they are a team player. So I think that's a fantastic example of, and you don't create that overnight because sometimes you need to remind some players what your teammate, they actually watch you leave early instead of just taking it back in.
Trevor Gleeson is a championship-winning coach, presently coaching in the NBA. He builds on Tracy and Thomas's points by talking about the link between being in a new leadership role and deciding what types of behaviour you were willing to accept or let slide.
I think if you have some of those areas when you first come in to being a leader, are you willing to put up with or what would you let slide to be a leader? And constant leaders that I've kind of researched and followed through, they're very consistent of doing the right thing over a long period of time. And normally the scoreboard and the results come out of that. Don't chase results straight away because you're not going to get there. You might get there for 1 year and you're not going to get there the following years. It's how you build that up, how your culture is, how your organization is. Then the relationships come, then the trust comes, and then success comes out of that. Those things are controllable. When that's important to be successful.
The topic of compromising on your behavioural standards comes up frequently with the great coaches. Here is WNBA championship winner James Wade talking about learning not to settle.
I guess the thing that I learned about myself was I had to put myself in a situation where I didn't settle. Sometimes you get into a situation and you don't want to fight every little fight. Every little detail, he's like, okay, that's not important. Yeah, that's not important. But you have to identify the things that are important to winning for you and the things that you've learned that are important to winning for you. And you have to stick to it. No matter how long it takes, you have to stick to it. Can't have any shortcuts. And it's so easier said than done because sometimes you feel like you're regressing and you're going backwards, but you're not. You're just building a pathway to winning. And sometimes it takes longer than other times.
Bill Sweetenham has coached 27 Olympic and World Championship medalists. And he is even more vocal on the need to avoid compromise. Here, he talks about the corrosive effect of compromising as a coach.
When every athlete retires, I go in and look in the mirror and ask myself, did I get the best out of that athlete? No excuses. I can't say, did I get the best out of that athlete who only came six sessions a week? Did I get the best out of that athlete who really didn't try hard? I can't do that. I can't rationalize that. I have to go in and look in the mirror at 50 years of experience and say, did I achieve without rationalization, without excuses, without compromise, get that athlete their best result? And if I can't do that, then I've failed. Whether it's the highest talent in the pool or the least talent, provided they're both committed to the training system that you've asked them to do. So whenever I fall short, it hurts. It leaves a scar.
The Premiership-winning Australian football coach Paul Roos explains how behaviours are standards that unite the team. He also outlines how teams can be either talent or behavioural based, and that it is the latter which produces more sustained performance.
It's very hard to be great. It's not easy. And you have to set the standards. And what the way we did it at Sydney and we started at Melbourne was the players involved in those standards. What do you want to stand for? You know, what's your brand? What's the Sydney brand? What's the Melbourne brand? And drive those standards relentlessly. And on the back of that, you've got to have a really good technical game style that stacks up in finals. So you have to be a really good technical team as well. And then you have to build really good relationships. And to get the players to really believe in what you're doing, you have to think you care about them and really understand that it's not the typical top-down approach anymore. You know, coach yells at you, coach screams at you. It's no, we're in this together. We're building this together. And there's a lot of sacrifice that goes into being a great team. there's two types of teams. There's a behavioral-based team and there's a talent-based team. Now, a talent-based team can win when their talent isn't going really, really well, but they're not going to win over time because all they are is based on talent. If their talent plays well, then they'll win. A behavioral-based team is a team that understands their standards, lives and breathes them week in, week out. One player gets injured, another player comes in, plays their role. They might drop a bit when their talent drops, but they don't drop anywhere near as much as the other team because they're really high on standards.
Gary Kirsten famously coached the Indian cricket team to victory in the World Cup in 2011. Here, he builds on Paul Roos's thoughts on behaviour-based teams by explaining how it was a shift in team behaviours that drove the Indian victory.
I think what really changed for us with the Indian team, we shifted our behaviours. We sat together as a group of people one day and we said, okay, the Australians are arriving here, they're the number one test team in the world. Do we think that we could become the best cricket team in the world? And when we looked around the room and we looked at each other as individuals, there was enough skill and ability in the room to say, there's no reason why we can't be the number one test team in the world. And then we said, well, that's great because a lot of people can do that. You can do that, the Indian team, because you have enough skill in the room to match the skill that's arriving on these shores in a few weeks' time. But things need to fundamentally change in this environment for that to happen. And we started to articulate what were the things that would need to shift that would allow us to start building out a process to reaching our abilities as a group of people with the skill that sat in the room. And we realized that there was actually a lot of tangible stuff that we could shift, the way we practiced, the way we spoke to each other, the way we took responsibility for things that weren't necessarily our primary role within the team. We started to talk about the name on the front of the shirt, not the name on the back of the shirt, as more relevant to the individuals. So there was some really kind of stuff you could hold on to. We wrote this all down and it was brilliant because as the players were writing it down and co-creating what they thought was the way forward for us as a group of people, it afforded me the opportunity then to have some words that I could use for the next 3 years that just became daily words into the team environment.
As in the example from Gary Kirsten, the importance of ensuring that the team is an active part of identifying the priority behaviours was also something that Paul Roos mentioned.
The thing that I loved about the system we created at Sydney and Melbourne is it's the player's choice, not from a technical point of view. So I want to make that really clear. So me as the coach or Nike as the shoe brand, the technical people put the shoes together. But what we're talking about here is how we're going to act as a group of people within an organisation. So there's the technical side and there's the behavioural side. So we believe that we had a really good technical game plan at Sydney and took that to Melbourne. And then the players themselves have to create. What do we stand for? What are we going to reward? What are we going to challenge? So they are slightly different because it has to be from the heart. It has to be what the players themselves want to create.
Once the priority behaviours have been identified and folded into the standards the team expects, there is also an expectation that they are reflected in the actual performance. Basketball coach Carrie Graff explains how they used behaviours to review performance during the actual game.
For example, in a timeout, if we'd had as one of our goals in the pre-game meeting was, we want to be relentlessly persistent or we want to handle adversity, that we'd pose that question in a timeout. Well, what are we? What's our score for relentless persistence on the boards? And we'd show hands and we'd use a scale of 1 to 6. 6 was world class, 0 was a disaster and there was no half score. So it's a little bit old school, but we'd say, well, put up your hand at halftime. Look at our goals. We said it's being assertive. Are we assertive? Put up your hand. 3s or 2s or 5s or 4s. And you were owning your own behaviour for the team's performance and you were looking at each other saying, yeah, well, I've got to pick up my game because I'm a 3, not a 4, or gosh, disaster, I'm a 2, or I'm a 5. So it was, I think, that consistent evaluation of the themes and how they utilised through everything we did, I think, had a huge impact. And I think, those 3 in particular that I speak to that are sort of life-specific are, relentless persistence, the ability to handle adversity, and a we team, which speaks to what I spoke to before in terms of team chemistry and cohesion and, the ability to work together as a group, that there's, the old adage, there's no I in team, and what does that actually mean? You know, it means respect for difference, that we're not jealous of each other, we're not working against each other, we're working together for a common cause.
A universal theme that has come through in our interviews is the need, as the leader, to model the behaviours you expect from others. Here is gold medal winning English hockey coach Danny Carey explaining this, and he links it to the need to be self-aware as a leader and to fuel that by taking the time to reflect.
Yeah, I think there are a number of strategic stroke tactical things you can do as someone who is serving to lead in a program. One of those is to model that behavior yourself. So being open about the journey you've been on, what you've learned about yourself and how that's helped you in the present. So you're sort of modeling that behavior, that self-reflection. And then there's lots of elements of some peer-to-peer feedback. So there's a sort of a raft of strategic stroke tactical things we do to sort of bring out that self-reflection, bring out that self-awareness. And I would really emphasize, I think there's a need for people in head coach positions, if you feel it's that seminal, which I do, to model that behavior. You can't expect it of others unless you're willing to demonstrate it yourself.
To illustrate the way great coaches talk about behaviours, we wanted to finish with some examples. The first is from rugby union coach Andy Friend.
Whenever we're reviewing a cultural performance, it's all around the four key behaviours which we've currently got. And the four key behaviours that came out of that promise, and that's evolved through time too, is number one, challenge and be challenged. Number two, prepare to win, so do whatever it takes to win. Number three is to know your... The boys say know your shit, so know what you do, but know what you do and therefore perform it. And the last one is don't be a dick. And again, that's the player's word. So again, it's not Andy Friend's words. These are the player's words. So those four things, whenever we're doing anything, we say, do you know your stuff and are you doing it? Are you being a dope or a dick? Did you prepare to win? And are you prepared to have the challenging conversations and be to challenge and be challenged? And pretty much that covers virtually everything that we do on a daily basis. And if we see it, we call it out and we say, brilliant, your preparation is outstanding, or great conversation, well done for pulling up on that, or great conversation, well done for rewarding that effort that you just saw. Conversely, we see something that didn't happen correctly, we say, hey, that's not what we do around here, don't do that. So we're forever challenging that and referring to that and bringing that to life, because a culture can't just be walls, words on a wall. It has to be something that you live.
Another good example comes from Bev Priestman, who coached the Canada women's soccer team to the Olympic gold medal in 2021. Here, she talks about a focus on bravery that drove the team forward.
And so that bravery part was just individual. It was process driven. I didn't want the outcome to be, we're going to get a gold medal. It was behaviours that I knew would improve and make the team step higher. So I think it just was celebrating regularly after every session, every game. I would highlight brave decisions, brave conversations, brave actions on the pitch to just constantly reinforce the confidence and driving the team to do more. And so players could take risks, because I think to be brave, you've got to take risks. And really, bravery isn't acting, it's acting in spite of fear. It's okay to have fear, but acting in spite of fear. And that was some of the conversations that we had as a group.
And finally, an example from basketball coach Dean Vickerman.
Which is selfless, hard, accountability, relentless, execute are the words that we use on that team. And to try and live it, you know, we've broken it down even further to finish a practice. The selfless side of it is, how did you make someone better? And so we'll ask that question after practice. How was your physicality, which was the hard of what we did? Did you make others better with screening? Did you compete on every rebound? Did you dive on the floor? Did you do all the little extra things that helped teams win? And then how did you execute what was prescribed or taught before practice? You know, did you achieve it in the day? Did you execute offensively and defensively what we wanted to get done over the day? And so we ask our players to either rate themselves or to rate their teammate, and give yourself a ticker across in all those three areas and try and build a consistency in our behaviours and practice every day.
We hope you enjoyed our episode on behaviours and found one or two things that you can bring to your own dinner table, locker room, or boardroom table for discussion. The key lessons I have taken away on the topic of behaviours from my interview guests are: behaviours are discussed more frequently by great coaches than team culture and values. Head coaches observe the behaviours of their teams and athletes and bring a no-compromise mindset to then challenging the athlete where expectations are not met. When the group agrees on the required behaviours, it unites the team and leads to sustained performance. And the leader must role model the required behaviours and be aware that what they choose to walk past will become the new standard. Here at the Great Coaches Podcast, we are always trying to learn, so please let us know if you have any feedback. Just like Mac and Gillian, who said, great insight into coaching and how to work with your teams and what makes them tick, and also how to get the most from them. Thanks, Mac and Gillian. The interaction with the people around the world who listen gives us great energy. And so if you have any feedback or comments, please let us know. All the details on how to connect with us are in the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.